Hello, you're listening to Just Screen It, Case Studies in Creative Distribution. I'm your host, Colin Stryker, and I am not an expert in indie film distribution. I am an independent filmmaker working towards making my first narrative feature, a horror film entitled The Grove. As I've been contemplating my own eventual distribution strategy, I've come to the conclusion that we need more data, more transparency, more information about how the various distribution options that are out there have worked for people. So I decided to start this podcast to help capture some of the experiences of those who have already been through it, whether successful or otherwise, and from those experiences, help both listeners and myself better understand this really complex, crazy landscape of independent film distribution today. So each week, I'll be bringing on a filmmaker who has self-distributed or been personally involved in the distribution of their film. My hope is that future filmmakers can take the knowledge gleaned from the show and use it to make their own decisions on how to best distribute their films. Hey folks, today I've got a real interesting one for you, kind of breaking the formula of the show a little bit, which is normally about talking to filmmakers about their distribution experiences. But in this case, we're going to spread our wings a bit and talk about film festivals, which for many filmmakers is indeed a very important part of the early distribution experience. Rebecca Louisa Smith is a film festival strategist, someone filmmakers might hire to help them navigate the very complicated and very competitive film festival circuit with their film. Rebecca has a wealth of experience with this stuff. So much great advice to offer here for filmmakers looking to get a leg up on their festival strategy. So if this is on your radar, you'll want to give this one a good close listen. My conversation with festival strategist Rebecca Louisa Smith. Okay, Rebecca, welcome to Just Screen It. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So maybe just to start out, because you know, as we just discussed offline, that where you come from is a little bit different from the other filmmakers, from the other people that I have on the show. So maybe if you can just start out, introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and tell us why we should listen to you.
So my name is Rebecca Louisa Smith, and I'm the CEO and founder of a company called The Film Festival Doctor. And what I do is I'm a film festival strategist, and I help people get their films seen in festivals around the world and win awards.
Nice.
So typically people come to me with a problem, that being, I've made my film. What do I do with it? Which festival should I submit to? Where should I submit to? How, why, where, when? Just, you know, we don't know where to submit, and we need you to help us figure out which festivals to submit to. So I create the right kind of strategy to get into the right kinds of festivals for the client's film. Every single strategy is different. Every filmmaker has different goals, different kind of audiences, different angles. You know, you have to add many layers to strategy nowadays. Important that we take that 360 holistic approach to get the results.
Okay, great. So yeah, looking forward to getting into talking about all that in a lot more detail. But I'm just kind of curious, just starting out, like, how did you get rolling with this? How did you get into this from the beginning? And, you know, how long ago was that? If you kind of don't mind, like, how long have you been a film festival strategist?
Well, it was interesting because it was all kind of by accident, to be honest. So I thought what I wanted to do was work in the world of academia and become like a film scholar, because I had a very passionate interest in Quentin Tarantino. And I do a PhD. I am a doctor of philosophy, obviously, and film and audience research, not medical doctor. That's why my company is called the Film Festival Doctor. But I always had a fascination with Tarantino's work and also his audiences. And someone said, you should keep on doing your academic research in him and go from master's to PhD. So there was one person in the UK who could really be the best kind of advisor and supervisor for my PhD, and he was in Aberystwyth in Wales. And that was quite far from where I lived in Perthshire, Worcestershire, which was like maybe 4 hours drive. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know what, this will be really good to, you know, stretch my wings and then do this research. I think it's important. Something's driving me there. It's not like, I don't feel it's my passion, academia, but I need to go there for some reason. And then a friend of mine who I knew in Worcestershire moved to Aberystwyth to run the theatre, asked for the Film Council for Wales to put on a horror film festival, because there was no horror festival in Wales at that time. So he said, do you want to help out? And I was like, yeah, I need something to distract me from the PhD because it's very intense, you know, solitary work. And then that hobby became my sole purpose. And I knew exactly what I was put on earth to do, was to produce festivals, organize them and program. But also more specifically, I found a gap in the market. There was nobody really doing this kind of service at this time back in 2010. So it's like 2008, 2009 was when I began to do festival production. And then I noticed there was a gap in the market. Every filmmaker I spoke with said that we love film festivals. We absolutely love them. But the problem we have is we don't know who to ask to get our films into festivals. We're just hoping for the best. Back then it was without a box that was on, not mm-hmm. Film Freeway.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we're just hoping for the best and, you know, see what happens and, you know, cross the fingers. There's nobody we can really talk to who knows about this for our film. So I like to see that. They said, no, everyone was saying it. I was like, does no one do this job? So it turned out there was like, maybe at the time, there was like one website that was advertising the service. And it was a very kind of, you know, like not a very kind of comprehensive service. So I wanted to really, you know, develop it to give it the best kind of model we could to get the films into the festival circuit and on the festival scene. So it's crazy. But then I was like, yeah, this is what I do. So then I had this idea to start my company up. And then I did some research. I had no business skills, so I was learning on the job. But I learned it as quickly as possible and having mentors. But it was a journey. But now it's fully up and running.
Yeah, great. Fantastic. Really interesting story there. I have to ask, are you still based in the UK?
No. Okay. So I am now based full-time in Dallas, Texas in the US.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Because you said something before we start talking, you said something about your gardener outside. And like, if you were in the UK right now, it'd be awfully late for a gardener to be outside after midnight.
You're doing it at midnight.
Yeah. Right. So, and I see the classic Pulp Fiction poster behind you there. You know, the one with Uma Thurman leaning forward, smoking a cigarette. It was sort of the classic that we all saw back then when that film came out. So just noting that. But yeah, so I'm kind of curious, like when you got started and you said that you knew kind of right away that this is what you wanted to get into, like what was appealing about that, if you don't mind? Like what really struck you as that being the thing that you really wanted to do at that time?
That's a great question, because really the thing that really just ignited it was I just really came alive and felt like myself, and I was just really enjoying producing a film festival.
Mm.
I did try producing a film and I did do it, but I didn't enjoy it much as I did a film festival. But I just love what goes into creating this big event for like a couple of days in Aberystwyth in this case, you know, getting together all the moving parts, like getting the guests, getting the beverages, the food, the venues, location, all these kind of things I really enjoyed. But I really love programming. I really love the programming and seeing what came through and what was submitted and the numbers of shorts we got and the features and all these kind of things. It was fascinating. So I really enjoyed it. And I thought, this is what I really love. But also, I love the programming part. And when I heard the filmmakers say to me that, you know, they're not really sure what they're doing, I needed help guiding with programming. I began to learn more about that through looking at other festivals programming, learning, getting more connections and going to more festivals. Because I was the one looking for films at Abattoir. I really enjoyed that part. And I thought there's like a little gap here to fill and, you know, and create a new service and just, you know, just something really different. It kind of went down like with a question mark at first. People were like, well, no one really knows what this is. And I was like, you've got to prove yourself. It's like, I know. But I said, I'm going to do it. And one thing I wrote in my business plan, I was just learning how to do a business plan back in 2010. I said to myself, I wrote at the very bottom, I want this service to go from being perceived as a luxury service for filmmakers to an in-demand essential one. And that every filmmaker has on their team a festival strategist. And that is now coming together.
Yeah, great.
Okay. More, it's like people realizing this is quite a minefield and a bit of even more of a roadmap.
Yeah. No, that's great. So you say it's finally coming together, but here it is, 2024. This was started in 2010.
Yeah.
So, like what happened in the middle?
It took a few years people to really get the whole festival strategist thing. In 2013, they were still a little bit like, you know, that was still a little bit of a question mark. And then people started hearing about the brand and what it was doing. And then it became more established after that. So it was, you know, certainly taking, you know, bit by bit, year by year, people were seeing the importance. And now it's like, you know, for the past, probably since about, say, 2017, it's been like a full-time, full-on job with staff now. So it went from being me to being now staff. So in between that was having to convince people a bit because, you know, people said, well, people know what a sales agent is, but how are you different to that? I said, well, it's not a sales agent because that's a very different kind of thing. That's selling films. This is put them in the festival circuit, which is a very different kind of thing. So having to really explain in layman's terms to people what this actually is. And even now, some people would say, I've never heard of someone like you. But slowly it's like, okay, well, we hear this is an important thing to have this guidance and the people that do this now. So that's what's, you know, nice to put that on the map a bit more.
Yeah. So getting into that a little bit more, can you describe what it is you really do? Like, I get that you're a film festival strategist, but I can imagine kind of several ways that could play out. And I'm just sort of curious what your take on it is. And, you know, what do you spend your time doing when somebody takes you on as a strategist for their team?
So the first thing we have to do is you have to assess the film and you have to check that the filmmaker is in alignment with their film and their goals for the festival circuit. So say a filmmaker comes with a short film and him or her says, I want to get the film in festivals which are only Oscar and BAFTA qualified. It's like, okay, well, that's your goal. It's a very specific goal, but let's see if the film can achieve that. If it can, then we can create a very strategic strategy that will be very focused on those kinds of festivals that have the right audience for that film and will be a good fit, and there's room for it to be potentially be programmed. Mm. Now, if it's not of that caliber, if it's, you know, there's problems execution and it's not going to be the right fit, there's going to be another plan B.
And sorry to break in, but just to ask a little bit more about that. Sometimes I'm sure the filmmakers think it's that caliber. Do you also find yourself in a position where you kind of have to inform them, yeah, maybe it's not that caliber, and kind of have to have that honest conversation with them? That must be difficult, both for you and for the filmmaker, I would imagine.
Yes, it can be difficult. If the filmmaker is very attached to the film emotionally and can't separate, then it's very difficult.
Yeah.
If they see it as a product and they're detached, it's a very different type of conversation.
Interesting.
So some can be, you know, this is my passion project. I've had it for 10 years and sometimes it doesn't come out the way that they might perceive. And sometimes they can't see that. So we're very honest. And I do give context when I give them feedback in my analysis of the film. I always give them the perspective we come from, and that it's film festival programmers. And they watch films very differently to how mum and dad and the milkman would, because they're looking at different things, look at different angles, they look at different things for their festival. So for example, they're very critical. They look at it from the point of view of like, oh, that would fit our program about LGBT. This would fit our program about, you know, West Yorkshire voices from UK, potentially. You know, they think about the angles. They also think about the story. Sometimes they can be forgiving if it's not quite a strong execution. Sometimes they won't be. Sometimes it's having to toss a coin between your film and someone else's film because they're quite similar. So they're both great, but just sort of see what happens when we flick a coin in the air. So there's very many different ways that they approach films. But obviously, my perspective and my colleague Sheila's perspective is we come from that angle, which is purely from the point of view of a film festival programmer, because my colleague Sheila has done programming for many festivals around the world, especially Canada. And obviously, I had an Abbott one at the festivals too that I did guest program on. But that's our perspective. So we're coming from that approach and getting that kind of feedback. And we also give them stuff in the analysis that they might have missed. So when we tell them the story, we say, you know, it can be like a good concept, but there's parts here that are repeating itself. Don't even be in there. It's too long. What doesn't make sense? Or somehow it might need to be longer if it feels like it's too much of a short film. It can be rare, but it can happen. So every film we see is different. And we give very strategic feedback that is honest, but it's constructive feedback. It's not tearing it apart and slating it. It's coming from that point of view and how they would watch it. So, for example, a lot of the time we do see shorts that have bad sound mix, bad sound problems. And that can sometimes, with new filmmakers, they don't notice it. So we explain it and then we give them contact details for our colleague who works in sound that can help them understand that. So we're helping them learn on this journey about the film and how to detach from the film and see it as a product and not get emotionally involved. Because that is a big thing. And that's the first thing I say to all my filmmakers who are, you know, very passionate about their work, which is great, is to see it in a way that it is now a completed product. And that will be perceived differently by audiences, by festival programmers, by sales agents, by distribution companies, by the press. And it might not be perceived in the way that you might expect because they see it from a different point of view, how they can sell it, how they can program it, how they can distribute it, how can they, you know, get a big buzz for it. There's many ways they can do that. It's been creative, but it's going to be, might be a different way to what you might expect.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So lots of sort of follow-up questions are kind of going through my brain. So I'm just going to rattle them off as I kind of think of them. And you know, one is kind of going back to what you said about the, you know, the sound problem, which is a common problem, I think, for especially for short films, for lower budget films, that kind of thing. And, you know, but just, you know, as an example, like, how receptive do you find it? How receptive are filmmakers, do you find, when they're confronted with those problems where maybe what you're telling them is, you know, this film isn't quite ready. It's not quite ready to be its best and get out and do its best job on the festival circuit. When I imagine a lot of filmmakers approach you after they think they're done, right? And they think they've finished their film and they're ready to just get it out and get it into the world. And then you come and maybe sometimes with some, you know, good brutal honesty, tell them that, yeah, it could probably be improved in this way. How often do you think filmmakers are kind of persuaded by your telling them that to kind of go back and improve it before they bring it back to you and you know, kind of revisit the festival circuit after that?
That's a great question, because a lot of the time they are, because they're coming to me for help and they'll listen. The ones that don't listen are the ones who aren't successful. So I did have an example. I had one filmmaker and I gave a very, you know, specific constructive feedback. And other people said similar things, what I mentioned about it too, but she didn't take it the right way because she took it very personally. And I did make a disclaimer, is that don't take any of this personally. This is about your film, not about you. It's about the film. There's problems here and there. And I've given her contact info for people that could help with the sound, with the edit, because it was not very clean edit. It was kind of sloppy. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't see that because she was so invested in the story, because it was a message film. And then she took a long time. Like, she didn't even say thank you, but she came back and said, it was a bit of pill to swallow. But now I've taken 6 months out, I'm starting to see what you're saying. So it is sometimes what I do say to filmmakers who can't quite detach, to say, well, take a break, take a bit of time out, and then come back to it with a fresh pair of eyes. When I was doing my PhD, there were times I was like, you know what I was writing. And then when I got directed feedback, I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. And I took a bit like a week out and was like, right, now I've got an idea to write it this way. The ones who can, like, literally quickly, like, oh, I get that, it's spot on, I'll make those changes, or yes, you're right, are the ones who have done some kind of separation technique from it. So, for example, there was a film that came my way that's still finishing post, but it wasn't the best feature film, put it that way. And the producer knew this and was like, oh, yes, it's a 3 out of 5. And then but the director was very attached to it because it was a love letter to LA. And, you know, obviously that he was from LA and all that kind of, you know, born and raised in LA. Luckily, though, the producer was very, very good with him. And so this is actually going to help the film get better, to get even bigger festivals potentially, because we can actually do this work. It can be changed in post. And then they've now gone back to it and it's done a whole re-edit and it is better. The acting's better. Everything about it is better. And I'm really impressed it took it on, because he had a strong producer managing it. And the director was like, okay, I see it now. And then managed to take that time out. But yeah, so the ones who can really take it on, like, really quickly and process it quickly, are the ones who sometimes have business head on and then see it in that kind of, in the market space than in the creative space. Mm. Creative space is when you're making it and it's all those wonderful ideas come out and you have all that amazing creativity flow through you, and you do it, goes from script to screen. And then sometimes it can be the ones that are still in that mode when it's finished post, can't see that it's shifted. It's now like the marketing product. So it's quite a different, can be quite jarring people. But sometimes it can be quite smooth. It just depends on the individual. So you have to treat each person very delicately and assess how they work and then work in with them. I'm always quite like, with my feedback, like, Sheila can be quite, you know, really, really like blunt. But I'm like, yeah, I see, but let's not be that harsh.
Right.
You know, let's put it this way. So I always like to be a bit softer. But people say that's like still strong. I'm like, oh, I thought that would be quite soft. But because everyone's got different emotions about their film. And sometimes it can get worse if it's a personal story written and directed into a filmmaker. So again, that's more layers to detach from, which is very important when you get the first festival rejection. Mm-hmm. Don't take that personally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because there's going to be many more to come. Even the best films get rejected by film festivals left and right, you know.
And yes.
Yeah, like, you've got to be ready for that.
Yeah, rejection is part of the process.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Yeah, for sure.
It's going to happen.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm interested also, like, when you get a film and you're kind of running it through that critique, you know, obviously, like, there's technical things like sound and, you know, how it's cut and stuff like that. But are you often also giving creative critiques? Are you kind of like, do you see films that you're sort of like, you see the creative vision, but it's not quite there, and you think that there could be something else that they could do to get it there, either by reshoots or, you know, by re-editing or something like that? Does that happen quite a bit too, that you're actually giving sort of more, yes, or sort of substantive feedback into the actual content, as opposed to just, you know, highlighting technical problems or things that you might think are holding the film back?
Correct. Yeah. So when we see things that there could be, you know, it could be shorter, then we always say that. So, for example, we had a film come our way that had a very slow beginning. It was a short. It was like, it took like 7 minutes to get going, and it didn't get to the action quick enough or to the point. So it's like, literally the whole phrase you might hear, short to the point, is very much true when it comes to a short film, especially with a certain genre. This was action. You've got to, like, I'm going to keep doing the same thing, saying different words in the beginning. So I said, look, you can cut that bit out and then go straight to that scene, because it gets you into the story and then it flows. So then some filmmakers saw it and go, okay, we quite like that scene because it was nicely lit.
Yeah.
And like, yep. But you can always put that scene on Instagram on your socials. So like a behind the scenes or a little clip or something that's like, you know, like a different kind of thing. So sometimes that can certainly resonate. Also, what we do is, apart from like the sound things, is that anywhere we can make the film its perfect length, we will say. So example, I just mentioned that, you know, there was like a 7-minute opening that could be less than that and cut it all out, makes the film a lot more leaner. It's really important that your film is the length it needs to be. There is like this myth or a rumor that a film needs to be 15 minutes. Now, maybe this is like 2013 this came out. People were saying like, oh, it needs to be 15 minutes. I was like, why? So I had filmmakers like make films 15 minutes, but it needs to be longer or shorter. Mm. So I had one filmmaker say, oh, my film is 10 minutes, 11 seconds. What can I do to make it 15? And I was like, why do we have to make it 15 minutes? This needs to be 9.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's important to not attach yourself to a number or that myth and to literally like, you know, let the film need to be what it needs to be. So we had a short that was 38 minutes and it could be 29. It could be a little bit in the beginning, in the middle, where it does the same thing, but just in a different character. So they said, oh, we can definitely cut that. We'll have two edits. We'll have director's cut and we'll have the festival edit. Like, that's fine. So that's what we did. And it's come out really well. And it's like, the flows differently. It flows better. And it goes seamlessly from that scene to the next, which is really, really good. Also, what's good too, is we like to give is, if we see a film that needs to be longer, then we'll say, look, it's very quick at the beginning. Is there something here that can add a bit of context or signposts to the story? And they're like, oh, actually there is, or we all need to do some pickups or something. So we're honest about it. You know, if we feel it feels too short, we'll say. If it feels too long, we'll say. If it's the right perfect length, then we'll say. And that could be 5 minutes or it could be 19 minutes or 20. But we do always mention, you know, like when it is a longer show, it's a little bit harder to program, obviously, in terms of slots and what genre it is, different documentaries to narrative. But we're very clear about it. And that's why we give a very streamlined strategy. It's very targeted. So it's focused upon festivals that it could get into without being too much of a hard sell.
Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, you must see such a wide variety of films that cross your desk, and films of, you know, differing levels of quality, films, you know, obviously films of different genres and different ideas, but also, you know, levels of quality, levels of technical competence, lengths, you know, just such a variety. And I imagine that for a lot of filmmakers, you might actually be the first person that they're showing it to that is not somebody that they know personally. You know, you're sort of the first person to kind of objectively critique their films without them, you know, without having a pre-existing relationship, which obviously can, you know, sometimes bias the criticism you get. So it just puts you in a really interesting position.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah. It must just be so fun to do that. Although probably difficult too at times, because you probably have to sit through some films you don't like so much, or, you know, you know, whatever, like, you know, and you have to watch everything that comes your way.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that does happen. And sometimes we are the first ones to see it, because sometimes the people other people that have seen that film can be friends, family,
yeah,
all that kind of thing, cast and crew, that sometimes they'll tell you what they want to hear.
Right.
Where we come on it from a very different approach, because we're emotionally detached from it. I'm looking at it from the point of view, very specific niche and point of view, which is not a niche that many people know. So one of the things I do say to filmmakers is, when you're getting feedback, is not to really get feedback from people who don't know film festivals.
Mm.
So a good person to get feedback from is obviously a festival strategist. I mean, that's obvious. And also festival programmers, if you know any of them. And also producers that know the festival circuit. Some of them do, some of them don't, some of them do. But the ones that don't know the festival circuit will not be of any help to you, because they're going to come from a point of view that's different. They can be producers that make content to sell, you know, if they're making feature films or whatever for a different market, and they wouldn't know the festival route. They're like, oh yeah, this would be great for South by Southwest. But I've no idea what South by Southwest program.
Right.
I had one client come to me who said, oh, the producers of Entourage, this would be a brilliant, brilliant film for the festival circuit and all the top tier Sundance. I said, well, these people might not be who they say they are, because looking at the film, it isn't. But also because they do TV, so there's two angles to approach there. So that really is important, even though you might know people that did Entourage or, you know, like the White Lotus, it's a different market. This is a very specific field. So it's very important that you speak to people that know that field inside out and what those festival programs want.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And so I think that, like, you know, kind of getting back to the original kind of question about all this is that, you know, you come, a filmmaker comes to you with a film and there's so many options in terms of what does that filmmaker want out of the film? What kind of film is it? And where is the best place for that film to be seen? And then what kind of festivals are out there? And where are the, you know, what's the best match for this film? And that's going to be, like you said, I think, you know, many minutes ago, you said, you know, that's going to be different for every film. So yeah, like, how would you break that down? Like, what are the sort of different categories, if I could, of like films and filmmakers that come to you? And how does that translate into your strategizing about where the best place for those films ends up being?
So obviously you have feature filmmakers and short filmmakers. So there's two examples. There's other ones I'll talk about in a minute, but those two are the common ones. So a feature filmmaker tends to have different goals to a short filmmaker. Feature filmmaker tends to want distribution, you know, to find a sales agent, to find a distributor, to pay the money back to the investors potentially. That could be one angle. They also want to get PR to help the film rise above the surface and be, you know, standing out in the media, you know, get like article in Deadline or Hollywood Reporter, Variety, etc. And now with the short filmmaker, they can be different because distribution tends to be less of a key goal. And it's more networking, putting up relationships with people of a higher level, getting an agent manager, getting more connections to make the next film different people. They're all kind of different. So I say with shorts, it's more exposure and networking is a key goal. Feature film, it's more selling and distribution. So obviously when we look at those kind of products, feature film can be very much, right? Feature film is also very different in the festival circuit because different types of premiere policies.
Mm-hmm.
Short films, you know, there are premiere policies to work around, but they don't all have the same type for a short film. Some festivals require, for example, you know, an Oklahoma premiere at Dead Center for a feature, but not so much a short. This doesn't matter. It's a different kind of market, different kind of audience, different kind of exclusivity. So again, it's kind of different kind of thing to juggle. But then with a feature film, we look at it from the point of view, obviously, festivals, and also that perspective of if it's a bit too commercial, would it actually play well at festivals? Would it be better doing more mainstream festivals that have this kind of film? If the film has a star in, that's a different thing altogether. It could be very commercial with a star. It could be doing bigger festivals. So it just really depends upon who's in it, what it's about, and how long it is. With a short, sometimes with stars in, that can help a lot in festivals. Sometimes it can't, depend who the star is. Predominantly, it's looking at different leagues, looking at the story execution, and if it fits a theme for the certain types of festivals. So it's very kind of like different kind of things there. And also with shorts, you know, if networking is a key goal, which kind of festivals would be good with a big industry presence or a lot of filmmakers present to connect with and build relationships. And you also have other types of products too, which we work on pretty much everything. So there's VR, that's a different market altogether, because that's always looking to make more connections with that product. There's podcasts, which mm-hmm. do happen now, fiction, non-fiction. There's branded content, so that's adverts. That's different. There's a very small number of festivals that do that, but they do exist, like Tribeca, for example, Tribeca X. There's also unproduced screenplays. So that means a screenplay that's not obviously been made into a film, obviously. There are festivals that have that category, which provide good opportunities for networking for the writer and the producer, trying to get off the ground or just, you know, to get some recognition for it and get it on the circuit.
Yeah.
And also there are obviously documentary and narrative, you know, very different in terms of both kind of content, and music videos.
Mm-hmm.
So different. Some festivals screen them, some don't. You have to look at their categories if they accept it. If they don't have a category, don't submit. The same with episodics and web series. Those two are different. Web series is obviously shorter, different kind of market. Episodics can be much longer. They can be 30 minutes to an hour. Web series tend to be like, you know, 5 to 15 minutes sometimes. But there's a different kind of market because web is more like, you know, the web, whereas episodic can be more like commissioned for a streaming broadcast or television. It's a different kind of thing. Again, there are different kinds of niches, all different kinds of strategic kind of like angles. So you just have to kind of really know the product and where best to place it again. But they all have a home on the circuit. Podcasts do nowadays, never used to.
Interesting. Yeah.
And again, with podcasts, it's interesting because there's more opportunities and more choice for a narrative podcast than there is a nonfiction podcast.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I would not have thought that podcasts would be festival material. That's really interesting.
Exactly. So, for example, Austin Film Festival don't accept nonfiction, only fiction, because it's a writer's predominantly. But Holly Shorts, for example, accept both fiction and nonfiction. You know, they're all different. So it's having to pay attention to detail. Otherwise, you could waste money.
Right. So, of course, and then also just like back to films, there's like, you know, genres, right? And obviously, I think there's certain film festivals that cater to certain genres. There's horror film festivals, there's sci-fi film festivals, you know, there's comedy film festivals, you know. So, you know, that's a kind of an obvious category that I imagine, you know, very quickly, once you see a film, you kind of know what type it is. You can kind of filter out certain film festivals or target certain film festivals based on that. But then, of course, I'm sure there's films that are sort of in between. You know, there's comedy horrors, there's drama horrors, there's, you know, there's all kinds of crossovers between genres, too.
Yeah.
And those, I imagine, can be a little bit more difficult to kind of strategize over. I'm curious, like how many films right now do you have on your kind of active list of clients that you're actively strategizing for? It's a lot to juggle, I imagine, kind of keep track of everybody's films and.
It is and it isn't. So I have a really good infrastructure in place now that I've had it planned for the past like maybe 7 or 8 years, but it's a very good infrastructure, which is kind of watertight. So we can manage moving parts really well. And there is a lot. We just said now is spot on. There's a lot of moving parts. Because some films are fresh and getting on the circuit. Submissions are being completed as we speak. Some are halfway through their festival run. So they've done a good chunk and are coming, you know, halfway mark.
Yeah.
And then you've got ones that have got, you know, a couple of festivals left to go. You know, you've got like 4 or 5 or something. So they're all different phases. Also, we do a package where we just do submissions and outreach. But we also do one where we do everything. So organize all the materials. So that too is a different kind of thing, more moving parts there, because obviously sometimes materials need to resend or get lost or don't work and all those kind of fun things. So that's what the other team members do. I also have a service where I do purely consultancy, where I provide strategy for the client and they manage it themselves independently. So there's quite a few of those. So it tends to be like we have per month, I probably have, you know, 4 or 5 consultancy clients, top of the management clients as well. So we have a few, but then I never take on too much. You're not going to give the client 10%. When you make a strategy, you've got to be really carefully thought out. So I know what the goals are for the client. They have to fill in the questionnaire before we do any work. So I know what the goals are, what the angles are, and that kind of thing. So I just know where to place it and what they're expecting and the levels of stuff to put on there, level interior festival. So it takes time. It's not like a 5-minute job. It does take time. And then obviously, you know, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes you need to do a plan B if it doesn't get the results they want. But then most of the time, it doesn't really happen. Yeah. Or I'm honest and saying, look, this is still going to be hard, this approach. We can try this first and then see what happens and give it a go, see what comes from it. So it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. And just curious, like what percentage of the projects that you work on do tend to be features versus shorts? And I know there's a whole, you know, all sorts of other variations too,
yeah.
But just kind of just in the film realm, like how much is features and how much is shorts, would you say?
So it does tend to be more shorts than features, I'll be honest. It's kind of like, I'd say, 60% shorts, 40% features and like the miscellaneous things. But I'm getting more features now because for some reason I'm just getting more features. So I've had 3 come in at once that I wasn't expecting. We work with a lot of feature films in South Africa. We have a contract with them over there and it's a brilliant, brilliant films that come away, but they don't do shorts. They just do features. They're distribution companies.
Okay.
So we'll work on those. So they are different, but it's fun to mix things up than being the same. You know, having that variety. Obviously, you have a client that can be, you know, like obviously all clients are different, but in terms of the product, you've got to like manage it differently and play around with it differently. You know, and then with feature films, it's very different in terms of getting feedback to a short. Depends who's in it, what the hook is, what the appeal is. I mean, I've actually got one film that is incredible and is about a very famous film called The Wicker Man. And it's directed by Robin Hardy's children. And it's a very interesting documentary. And that's getting very quickly festival invites from genre festivals because it has a massive audience.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to book it in quick, whereas some that are going to be with no hook in it can be a slower kind of sell, but gets the breakthrough eventually. Just getting that one breakthrough is just what you need. It has to be patient with it.
Yeah.
All I can say is like, it will test your patience. I think it also might develop your patience is what will probably happen.
For sure. Yeah. Makes sense. So do you have like kind of a high standard for clients that you accept? Do you turn away a lot of clients because you just don't think that you can provide them the right service? You're not interested in their film, that kind of thing? Or do you just kind of take everybody who's willing to pay? Like how does that work?
So I can't take on everything because when people just want to, I do things for the money because it doesn't look good on me to present the film to festival programmers when it's not going to be festivals. So I'm very strict with that, you know, and I'm very honest. I say to the client, look, you want to achieve X, but the film can't achieve that for you. So it's no point doing it.
Huh.
So I have to be very honest with it. If they're going to be flexible to go down a tier or do something different, then it's no point working on it. It just causes more stress. And I always, sometimes I give like a very big disclaimer to clients, say, look, right, this is going to be a different kind of product to work on, you know, like a podcast, for example, but it has these angles. So let's try them. It's not going to be a massive strategy, but let's give it a go kind of thing. So yeah, that's what we tend to do. Yeah. I'm very like transparent, given the risk factor involved, no guarantees, what we can and can't do, you know, and then see how you get on. Sometimes though, some filmmakers can't always take that pace throughout the festival and it can be challenging. Then some of them can, again, they're all different, but we're there to give them the best advice we can and to get the best results we can.
Great. Yeah. So yeah, when do you recommend that filmmakers approach you? Do you recommend they approach you like, you know, early on in the process, later in the process? What's the best way to go about that?
A really good question. The best time is in development stage. You know, so get me attached early in the budget early is a really good time. Yeah. And the most of the time doesn't always happen because sometimes people think of festivals at the end, which is nothing, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just about the money and how much you can afford to do and what you can and can't do. So I tend to be coming on board during post-production or finished, but either way is fine. As long as there's a budget available to do what you want to do will be absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
But it's always good in the early phases that way I'm in the budget early. And then, you know, like that way you put the money aside and then, you know, it's there. What do you really need it, I suppose? But I'm happy with both, whatever's
been. Definitely a challenge for filmmakers who are, you know, are kind of throwing everything into production. And then, you know, they're not, sometimes they're not even throwing enough into post-production, let alone the festival circuit, you know. And then, of course, you know, after that, they're trying to, especially feature filmmakers, are trying to hold on to something for marketing budget even after the festivals, you know, all that kind of thing. So it can be pretty daunting to keep track of all that and you know, yeah, account for your budget properly that way. So if we can, like, what kind of pricing model do you offer for your service or what variations on that? And, you know, if you can talk specific numbers, that's great. If not, that's cool too. But what's your general, you know, how does that work for you?
So with the consultancy packages, we do offer a few services. We offer a film analysis service, and that's where we give you the feedback on the film from the point of view of festivals. If, before you start going down that road, you need the feedback, and that's like $298. Then we have the full festival package, which is where, sorry, the festival strategy package, where we create the strategy, and then we have a one-to-one session, so that's $850. And then we have management packages that begin at $3,000 and go up in price, depending on what you want, how much involved you want us to be. Hmm. That's the kind of like the ballpark. So it's pretty reasonable for whatever one anybody can afford, we take on.
Yeah, interesting. So do you differentiate between shorts and features at all in that package?
No, because they both require much. I mean, it could be with a feature maybe more at one point, but then it's like, well, it's still the same amount of work for a short as well.
Yeah, so yeah.
Keep it the same. We do sometimes that we also do and produce screenplay consultancies. And for a feature that is more because it's going to be a longer read and more bigger cheek than it is a short. So they do differ. But feature films, no, because it's a finished film.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem because you're right. I think it takes just as much work. But generally speaking, filmmakers are not going to have as much money available. So, you know, just kind of interesting how to get out of that conundrum. You know, just kind of talking further then, like, do you have advice for filmmakers on, you know, kind of how to go about, you know, obviously they pay you to strategize about a film festival. So I'm not looking for to get into that. They can pay you if they want to get that information, but just kind of more general advice about thinking about film festivals and whether they would want to approach somebody like you to help them. Like, you know, what kind of general words of wisdoms would you offer in that regard?
I would say plan ahead as early as possible. And it's important to think about your festival strategy in the beginning when you write the script, because if the script isn't strong enough and it goes into production, festival programmers will see the flaws. So it's important that you've got the script in the best place it can be, a watertight script, and, you know, in the best form it can be, and you've done the rewrites and it's all, you know, it's solid and it's across the finish line. Then that's a good time to think about festivals and to make sure at the same time you have a crew that can execute that story in the way that the director envisions, but is the best team to put it together. I mean, sometimes we have scripts that are really good, but just something changes in the development and then someone else comes in with different people and it doesn't work out the way it was on paper. That can happen. But as long as you've got a good script and you can then work with people that can know how to adjust it or whatever, is the most important thing, to get the right team, you have a really good screenplay in shape, and think about festivals early. And also with festivals, thinking early, it's important then that you put a timeline together. So you're like, right, the film will finish post in June. So what will that mean with festivals? When do we begin? When are we going to think about on the circuit? So if it is in June, you could still get into festivals at the end of the year, but it might be at late deadline phase. So that way you think, okay, remember, we'll start then submitting and then get on the circuit 2024, 2025, whatever year it's going to be.
Right. Yeah. But hard to keep track.
Keep track, that kind of thing. So be very like focused on the planning and, you know, allow delays and, you know, things, you know, obviously in post never really ends on time because there's so much to do. but just be, you know, flexible for everything to come together.
Yeah. Okay. Great advice. So do you have any like sort of really cool success stories or, you know, films that have gone like really far, have done really well, like far, maybe exceeded your expectations, you know, that kind of thing? Actually, before you answer that, because I want to end that question on a positive note. So I'm going to ask you the other question first is, which, do you have any particularly negative experiences, particularly difficult filmmakers or films, or, you know, films that didn't match your expectations in terms of how they did on the festival circuit, that kind of thing? You know, obviously, you know, some of those stories you might want to keep close to the vest, but I'm just curious if you have anything that you would like to share.
Yeah. So I've had difficult filmmakers before, the ones who can't let go or get too controlling, interfere, won't let us do the job, or won't listen, or they won't accept no for an answer. So you do have some of that. And that was more in the earlier days. I knew then how to manage them and how to be strong and to work with them. But generally, they're all like, you know, pretty on board and understand how things work. Because we do give a lot of material for them to read, so they understand the circuit and what's going to be ahead of them and how to prepare mentally, physically, and emotionally. And in terms of films, there were some films I thought, like, why did I not do as well as I thought it would? But then sometimes at the very end, it just kicks off.
Huh,
and it's weird. You're like, really? Didn't get into there? And you're like, okay, maybe there's a film that was similar. And you see the program, you're like, okay, that film was actually quite similar to this film. Maybe that's why, just the whole, you know, tossing a coin. But then sometimes, like, when I let go of it and, like, you know, stop thinking about the whys, and then I just let it go, and then it all comes together, it's incredible. You just see all the magic happening. You're like, oh, okay, now it's doing its thing.
Yeah.
There's some films that surprise me, like, it's got a few problems, but it has a few things that might help it, and it does exceptionally well, like more than you think. And that's features and shorts, not just shorts. So I always get a surprise, which is always a nice thing. Yeah, because it's just more than what you think it can do. Because it's resonating with the programmers and the audiences.
Yeah. Well, I guess that kind of leads to the other side, which is the kind of the positive side of it. And, you know, do you have any further stories to add, like of films that did, you know, really well, exceeded your expectations, really surprised, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that would be most recently. There was a short film I consulted on called Bienvenidos a Los Angeles that got Oscar shortlisted. That was incredible. It did a lot of festivals. It had a very interesting story about immigration, different approach to it. It's not a true story. Very diverse cast. It was really interesting. And it did a lot of festivals. And it didn't do all like the top tier. It did Cleveland, I was qualified, did Holly Shorts, LA Shorts. But it was doing like a lot and winning a lot of awards. I think, yeah, about 60 festivals. I think it got 21 awards. Then we got the one Oscar shortlist. And then, you know, they did the run theatrically. And the people to work with were great. It was called a company called Creator Plus. It was just incredible. And I worked with other films with them that also did really well, which I was really happy with, just to get the results. But that was incredible to see that happen. Obviously, it's so hard to get on that shortlist. And we had no stars in it, you know, no big budget. And it was just great that it got on there because of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. That must be really rewarding when something like that happens.
Yeah.
It
was so amazing. So that was really nice to have.
Yeah. So how much time do you spend, like, because, you know, obviously you spend time with filmmakers, you spend time talking with them about, you know, their strategies, but how much time do you spend on the other side of it? How much time do you spend talking with festival programmers and kind of getting their take on it? Or do you, you know, or I mean, do you approach them directly and talk with them directly? Or do you just kind of do research behind the scenes and kind of sleuth them out, you know, that kind of thing, or both? You know, what can you say about that?
It's a bit of both. So we talk a lot of festival programmers about the films all the time that we work on. Some contacts are good friends of ours. Mm-hmm. Some we know as business, you know, like obviously in the world of film festivals, some are very strict with what they give and what they do and don't say. So yeah, all the time. So, you know, so it's part of our job is to know what those people want and what their tastes are, if it will resonate with their taste and with their audience's taste and their preference. So yeah, 24/7, we're doing that all the time. So my like days and my team's days are very much like, you know, lots of stuff going on. So it's like talking about the films we work on, organizing screenings, creating new strategies, watching films that come in. So it's a lot of stuff going on at once, which is quite fun.
Yeah.
You can change that for the world, really, because it keeps you creative and keeps you focused. I always learned something the other day about festival world, about what festival's coming up or what they're programming, this, that, and the other. So it's always something, there's a lot of stuff to keep on top of. That's why it's a full-time job. It's not a thing on the side, because if you're working out on the side, you miss things. So we learn things that come in from festival programs all the time. So it's a constant kind of flow, really.
Fascinating. Do you go to a lot of film festivals as well?
Yeah. So I go to quite a lot. I'm always at one, you know, once or twice a month. I've done a lot of traveling recently. I've got to go to Maryland Film Festival Friday. I've just come back from Sedona Film Festival, where we got 2 awards. So it's like, it's a lot of festivals were in April and August, September, October, and November. So yeah, that's when you're really busy. I mean, you're busy every month doing festivals, but that's like a lot at once. So it's a lot of travel, quick trips here and there.
Yeah, I guess you can't do what you do unless you like traveling.
Exactly.
An awful lot of traveling.
Yeah. There's a lot of traveling. I mean, I travel domestically in the US, around the US. Some people may go to travel worldwide because that's where the films are being screened.
Yeah, for sure. I also know, just kind of looking at your bio and stuff, that you've also written some books. And in particular, you've been kind of focused on mental health for filmmakers,
yeah,
which I think is a crucially important topic. You know, my last guest, we got into talking about that a little bit. And, he had some difficulties and went through some mental health issues, you know, for a while. So, yeah, I'm really interested to follow up on that and kind of get your take on all that. You know, what do you have to say about filmmakers and mental health?
Yeah. So the book I wrote got published at the end of last year, which is called Film Festivals and Looking After Your Mental Health. And it gives you a toolbox regarding how to cope with rejection, because rejection is part of the process. As we said earlier, you're going to get rejection, but how good the film is, it's going to get rejection.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of firsts, or it could be minimal. It just depends. But there's a way to approach it. Because through my years of doing this, I saw people respond to rejection in very different ways. Some of them are quite troubling. So I thought, right, this needs to be approached a different way. I think a main thing which filmmakers get stressed about when they get rejections, they don't know why it was rejected. Because they didn't like it, or they love it, but they couldn't find room. There's many reasons why.
Yeah, you wish you could get that feedback. Sorry to interrupt, but God, exactly. You wish sometimes you could just get some feedback on why the rejection. I think it would help in a lot of cases. But yeah, go ahead.
It would probably help a lot. Yeah, that kind of thing. So, because you don't know, I explain how to see rejection as a positive thing and how it can help reshape your strategy and how you can learn from it, and also how to look after yourself during that process. Because as you were saying, it's like it can really break people.
Yeah.
People think they're detached emotionally, but they're not, because they've got so much pressure that they didn't know they had unconsciously going on. So it gives you a toolbox. And I mean, although the title says film festivals looking after mental health, actually it could be applied that approach to any industry, really. You know, it's pretty general, it's like you can apply that framework and that tips and techniques and that approach to, you know, advertising industry and all that kind of thing, where you're doing a job that's going to be management or kind of promotions, and rejection comes in. It can be anything, really. But I did it especially for filmmakers to approach them. And I also put in a story from a client of mine about her experience at Soul Circuit and how she cut rejection and how she perceives it and how she learned to look at it differently to help them on the journey too.
Yeah. I think that's a great tool and something that I think filmmakers need to focus on. I think it's, you know, aside from the film festival and the rejection thing, which is obviously a huge topic, but also just, you know, the filmmaker life is so hard. The independent filmmaker life is so hard. You put so much into it. It's so hard to make movies. And so you have to pour so much of your soul into it. And then to run into those rejections and all that kind of thing, it's like a big slap in the face for all of the hard work that you put in, all of the personal energy and blood, sweat, and tears and all that stuff. So filmmakers, I think, I'm sure there's professions that have to worry more about mental health for, you know, much more serious reasons. But, you know, that being said, filmmakers have it hard in a lot of ways, I think, and really need to do a lot to take care of themselves and balance their lives out so that they don't just get completely burned out on it, you know.
Which is why the book is free. You can download it from my website free.
Oh, great. Wow. Didn't realize that.
You could then just have it and it's there for them when they need it at most, you know, times of need.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So yeah, I think we're closing in on an hour here. Just wanted to know if there's anything else you wanted to cover that we didn't cover. I missed a question that you wanted to answer. You know, now's your chance to let us know.
You've pretty much done like full circle. For you to
Yeah, I try to cover it all, but yeah.
You do really well.
Thank you.
The key really is, everything's been covered. And I think one thing I'll end with is my little motto to filmmakers is always, before doing festival submissions, it's know your film, know your festivals. So get your feedback, know what kind of film you've made, and then figure out which festivals are going to want to screen it or potentially interested in the film. Because that's a really key thing to do, and not like when it's finished, like, right, let's submit to Sundance. Is it what they want? So that was going to save money and time and emotional distress. So that's my key kind of thing to finish with.
For sure. Yeah, great advice. And then lastly, you know, where can people follow you, you know, get in touch with you if they want, that kind of thing?
So my website is thefilmfestivaldoctor.com. Instagram is at Rebecca Film Doctor. So that's RebekahFilmDr at Rebecca Film Doctor. My website has info about me, our packages, our pictures, all those awards, pictures of awards, that kind of fun stuff, updates. It's all on there.
Terrific.
As is Instagram, which has daily updates to all wins and successes for clients, which is very exciting. But yeah, DM me on there or email me. And I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Okay, great. I'll put that all in the show notes so people know where to find you and get in touch. So it's been really a fantastic conversation. I love the insight that you have into this world and the advice that you have for filmmakers, you know, facing the festival circuit. I think it's a daunting prospect for a lot of filmmakers. So knowing that there's somebody like you out there that can help them through this, I think is great. Great to have, great resource. So appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been really, really fun. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, that's all for today. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That is the best way that you can help me grow the show and reach a wider audience of independent filmmakers and others who just want to try to understand this crazy, crazy world of independent film distribution. As always, feel free to contact me directly with any feedback or suggestions for the show. You can find me on Twitter, or should I say X, or Instagram at DarkRoseColin, or you can email me at Colin@DarkRosePictures.com. That's Colin with one L, C-O-L-I-N, at DarkRosePictures.com. And by the way, DarkRosePictures.com is my website for my feature and other projects. Its purpose is not just to promote my films, but to tell the story with honesty and transparency of my own personal filmmaking journey. So if you want to follow the process of an independent filmmaker from development to distribution, this is a great way to do that. So check it out, DarkRosePictures.com. Anyway, a big thanks to Rebecca Louisa Smith for giving us some great insight into festival strategy. Another big thanks to Jeff Freimuth for his timely editing work. I've got more great guests lined up for you in the coming weeks, talking all things indie distribution. So please stay tuned, keep getting those movies out there into the world. And as always, thank you so much for listening. See you next week.